because these first three verses discuss the qualities of sadhu, is kupalu. I mean, they're actually part of dukkha-dukkhi. They're unable to tolerate the suffering of others. When they see someone else suffer, they also suffer. So the mood of a sadhu is that he wants to, well, they want to give the knowledge that enables others to overcome suffering. And the essence of this suffering that they're looking at, he is experiencing in this material world, is thinking of the material body. As long as we're convinced, as long as we think that I am this material body, this will be the source of all suffering. Because everything connected with the body causes suffering. You just analyze, you know, I've had lots of opportunities to analyze, you know, I'm sure, you know, our devotees were recently in a car accident and had lots of opportunities to analyze the suffering nature of this body. You know, it's, you know, we're working too many details here. You know, there's many things that are starting to go wrong in my body and they're causing all sorts of pain, all sorts of inconvenience. I mean, traveling for the last 10 weeks, so many inconveniences with it. So it just gives you an opportunity to contemplate the suffering situation this body causes. And the more attached we are to it, the more suffering it brings. And it's interesting, we read through this section here because it starts off, go back quite a few verses. Where Krishna, he's describing to Uddhava the nature of saintly person, and it talks about how they're completely detached. They're not, you know, they're actually, even though their body is going through all the things, they're sitting, they're walking, they're eating, they're sleeping, they're going through so many things, they're not actually involved in it, they're not attached to it. Because they see the duality there, they see the suffering that comes by being absorbed in the body, by being attached to the functions of the body, being attached to the results of our activities. As long as we're attached to the results of activities, then this generates suffering. Because sometimes the activities produce positive results, sometimes the activities produce negative results. When they produce positive results, we're elated. When they produce negative results, we're disturbed. But this is not the position of a sadhu. A sadhu is equipoised. A sadhu is neither, I don't remember that verse in the Gita, but a sadhu is neither elated in happiness or just, you know, sad in distress. He's just equipoised. And that's what Krishna is explaining to Uddhava here. He's explaining his position. So then actually, if we go back, what was it, three verses ago, then Uddhava asks the Supreme Personality of Godhead, what type of person do you consider to be a true devotee? Because Krishna is explaining about a sadhu. So now he's asking, you know, how do I understand what's a true devotee? Because he's understood that, you know, this is the highest position. This is really what I want to be, is a true devotee. And it's kind of interesting, I was reflecting on this when I was reading through this, that it's kind of interesting because Uddhava is asking similar questions to Arjuna. We see that, you know, Arjuna, he says, since yesterday I'm saying one from another, that now I'm your disciple, the soul surrender unto you, please instruct me. So Uddhava is saying something similar. But we see that Arjuna, he was saying that, you know, now my mind is affected by miserly weakness, I've lost all composure, and I'm bewildered about my duty. But it seems that Uddhava is not so bewildered. Bit of a different situation. But of course we understand that Arjuna was put into bewilderment by Krishna's arrangements. Not to minimize Arjuna in any way, because Arjuna is Krishna's eternal associate. Yet, different time, different place, different circumstance. Therefore Krishna gave different knowledge. And as Maharaj was mentioning, what was it on? Friday? Or Thursday? Probably Thursday. Sort of lost, you know, where I am right now, what day it is. Slowly, you know, re-entering into Melbourne. That, you know, like the instructions of the Gita are more general, you know, they're more generic instruction for people at large. And we see that, you know, Bhagavad Gita is often referred to as the ABCs of spiritual life. So the basic understanding that contains all the basic philosophy, you know, things like you're not the body, action, you know, serving Krishna, etc. like that. Whereas we see here that Krishna is presenting more specific, and he goes into great detail on specific things, just like this whole chapter is basically describing the symptoms of sadhus and the symptoms of devotees, and also of impious persons or non-devotees, is describing that. So he's asking, you know, who's the true devotee, and what type of devotional service is approved of by the great devotees. So then Krishna starts by describing here, he goes through these four verses here, and he goes into a lot of great length to describe the saintly qualities. And the first one, as being mentioned here, is Kripalu. You know, we'll never get through if I discuss each one of this. And the purport is quite lengthy, so it's really unlikely we'll get through a whole purport today. Kripalu, akritadroha, never injuring others.
Never injuring others.
Sudikshu, forgiving.
Sarvadehinam,
toward all living entities. Satyasara, one who lives by truth and whose strength and firmness come from truthfulness. Anabhadya Atma, a soul free from envy, jealousy, etc. Sama, whose consciousness is equal both in happiness and in distress. Does anyone ever experience that? That doesn't matter what happens to you, your consciousness is the same. And Krishna discusses this also in the Gita to Arjuna, where he said, what's that verse? Thank you very much. Smakta spasas the kunteya, sikoshna sikha dukkita, agamabhiyena dukkastam sadikshasa bharata. That the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress, and their disappearance in due course of time, are just like the appearance and disappearance of summer and winter seasons. They arise from sensory perception. So just like, you know, like 4 days ago, I flew here from London. It was a flight straight from London. It took, I don't know, 25 or 60 hours total. And when we left London, it was really nice and warm. It was about 26, 28 degrees. And then we got to Bangkok, and it was 32 degrees. I thought, this is very nice. And we get here, and it's freezing cold. And it's like very difficult to come to an environment like that. So I can see that I'm absorbed in sensory perception. But for someone who's not caught up in the sense, okay, they perceive the difference, but they're not overly bothered by it. So Krishna is saying, Arjuna, the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress, it's just like this changing of seasons. It comes and goes. But how you perceive it is just based on your senses. And because we have a particular set of senses, we perceive one thing as being happiness, whereas another person who has a different set of senses perceives the same thing as being distress. Exactly the same thing. Like some people may think, you know, like you can go to some of these countries in Asia and things like that, and you see the things they eat, they're so abominable. I remember being in Taipei years ago, and just some of the smells that were coming out of the shops made me want to vomit. I felt so sick just by smelling these things. And, you know, these people obviously think they're very palatable, otherwise why would they cook them, why would they sell them? They think they're very, very palatable. And yet, you know, we may have things that we think are very palatable and they find to be repulsive. So it's just about senses. It's just, you know, the way your senses are influenced by the most material nature. And it produces all these different understandings. So the point here is that a saintly person is undisturbed in happiness and distress. It doesn't matter what happens in their life, they just see it as the workings of the material nature. Prakriti krimana na guna karunisamsa. It's just the material nature working. Ahankara vimukha kata. But one who's bewildered by the influence of false ego thinks kata haniti manite, that I'm doing it. And so someone who actually understands this is all the work of the material nature is unaffected by the changing, the constant changing. We see in this material world, it's constantly changing. Just like yesterday was a nice day, today is a typical Melbourne day. Just blustery, you think it's going to blow the house down. Right? And especially if you live on the beach, there's nothing between you and the wind. It's just really howling. But it's just changing. It's constantly changing the nature of the world. We just need to learn the constant nature, how the nature is constantly in flux because the modes are mixing. It's just constantly mixing, changing. Always in flux like that. Sarva-upakaraka. Always endeavoring as far as possible. For the welfare of others. Kamai. By material desires. Ahata. Undisturbed.
Dihi.
Whose intelligence. Danta. Controlling the external senses. Mridhu. Without a harsh mentality. Shuchi. Always well behaved.
I think you are missing the verse.
I know we're missing those verses. There's only one verse there.
Oh, I
didn't. Yeah, because it couldn't fit four verses on this little board. Yeah, no problems. Akinchana,
without possessiveness.
Aniha,
aniha.
Actually, this is a very good word called aniha. Means free from worldly activities.
Mitabuk,
eating austerely.
Shanta,
controlling the mind.
Stira.
Remaining steady.
In one's prescribed duty.
Machana. Accepting me as the only shelter. And we'll see that in the purport, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur describes that this is actually the most important of all these qualities. And if one has this quality, then automatically all the other qualities will develop, as it's described in the fifth canto. It says, Yashasti Bhakti Bhakti Kinshana Sarai Gunastatra Samasakrishna Harav Bhakti Shokuto Mahaguna Maradena Sintahavad over here. That it says, Yashasti Bhakti Bhakti Kinshana. That all the good qualities of demigods, all actually says, Prabhupada translates, all the demigods and their exalted qualities manifest in the body of the person who has developed this unalloyed devotion, surrender. The Supreme Personality of Godhead. And it says, Haram Bhakta Shokutoma, that however, one who is not a devotee has no good qualities. This is not my statement, this is the statement of Prahlad Maharaj. And it is the, I think it's 5.12.18. It says, Haram Bhakta Shokutoma, it says, no good qualities. Even if they're adept at the practice of mystic yoga or the honest endeavor of maintaining their family and relatives, they must be driven by their own mental speculations and engaged in the service of the Lord's external energy. How can there be any good qualities in such a man? That's the statement of one of our acharyas, Prahlad Maharaj. He's saying that, for one who's engaged in Krishna service, who's surrendered, the sharanam means surrender, you give yourself fully. And that's the point that's being made here. There's mat sharanam. It's saying mat to me, mine. Krishna is saying mat sharanam, there's fully absorbed in me. They actually possess all good qualities. Because in due course, even if they don't possess those qualities, because of that surrender, then the qualities will become manifest. Muni. Thoughtful. Apramata. Cautious and sober. There's another very cool apramata as well. Gavira Atma. Not superficial. And thus unchanging. This is very Ganatan called Kabira too. All these names. Very deep. Kabira. Drittaman. Not weak or miserable. Even in distressing circumstances. And I was reflecting yesterday with Srila Prabhupada that even though sometimes he faced the most challenging circumstances, he was never weak. He was always very strong in his determination to carry out the orders of his spiritual master. And he had some quite, you know, difficult, he was faced with some very, very difficult situations. Just like when Prabhupada was trying to secure the land in Bombay. Last week I was in Mayapur for Balaram Purnim. Fabulous festival, very, very nice festival. It's probably the biggest festival they have of the year because they have deities there at morning time. Radha and Govinda Madhav. Govinda Madhav was quite sweet. And it's really interesting because Govinda Madhav, he's bending like this right over. You know, his head's almost touching, his left cheek's almost touching his left shoulder. And it's really interesting because I was reading the 10th canto in the morning and I read this verse which is describing how Krishna's left cheek touches his left shoulder because he's bent over playing his flute. So it's, you know, it just looks just like Govinda Madhava. And also Krishna Balaram. And Krishna Balaram and Gaurinathai were installed by Prabhupada. Gaurinathai were installed in 1975 and Krishna Balaram were installed in 1976. And so every year they have this Balaram Purnim festival. So it's a really big festival. And a few years ago they had 400 devotees come to this festival. And this year they had maybe about 100, 120 devotees. And, you know, very, very nice kirtans, etc. Prasad, you know, very, very nice festival. And Srila Kirti Prabhu was there. And he was talking about how Srila Prabhupada, you know, when he was had this challenge trying to get the land, trying to secure the land in Bombay, because actually, you know, this man had the Prabhupada was working with purchased land from. He actually entered into a legal agreement with Prabhupada, and then he changed his mind. After Prabhupada had signed the papers, paid the money, he decided he was going to keep the land. And apparently, this person had done this quite a few times in the past, and it's just his way of embezzling funds from people, you know, just by cheating and taking money. And you know, Prabhupada several times had come across experiences like that. When there was this, what was his name, Mr. Price, in New York, how he cheated Brahmananda of all that money. So, you know, it's like that, Mr. Mitchell, well, there's many cheaters. And but this went on with Bombay, it went on for many, many years. A long time went on for. And still Prabhupada maintained his determination. He did not become weak. And we see that even his disciples at one point gave the land back. They became weak. It was too much for them. But Prabhupada, he just had this vision that, yes, Krishna wants this land. And he promised Rasa Bihari, he said, you know, he had them build that shed. And it was just it was a tin roof. There was no sides or anything on it. It was just a tin roof. He put the deities there. Amazing. You know, Prabhupada installed deities in a tin roof. And I remember speaking to the Bajaris, telling me about they were telling us about the conditions. You know, they'd have rats nibbling on their toes when they're sleeping, like huge big rats. You know, it was such really horrific conditions. And even when you see the devotees, they didn't become weak there. In the face of the most, you know, distressing obstacles, the most distressing situation, because they knew that Prabhupada won that land, that Prabhupada went through so much sacrifice. But Prabhupada promised Rasa Bihari, he said, you stay here on this land. He said, well, here, so you stay here, and I'll build you a beautiful temple. And anyone who goes to Bombay now can see that actually Prabhupada's promise has come to fruition. They've recently finished, I think about 18 months ago, a year and a half, 2 years ago. They just finished, because they won all the land back, you know, from the squatters about 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago now. And they built this beautiful, I don't think they call it the Lokitan or something like that. This beautiful guest house, and they've like knocked all the old houses down and you know, put lawns and everything. Very, very, and there's a school there, everything. Very, very wonderful project. And a beautiful temple, the guest house, two twin towers, the guest house. An amazing project. We see how Prabhupada, he did not waver. Even in the face of the greatest obstacles. Also Prabhupada's disciples who stayed in Bombay in the early days didn't waver in the face of the greatest obstacles. And we see that Krishna appreciates that. We see that Krishna reciprocates with the devotee. Another time Prabhupada was in Calcutta and they had this Pandal program. And Prabhupada's Pandal program was very, very successful. And he received this threat from the Naxalite communists, who were very, very radical communists that did, you know, lots of violent things and stuff. And they sent Srila Prabhupada this letter, fly or die. And Prabhupada wasn't at all moved by that. He just continued with his program, went on with his preaching. And at one point, then the Naxalites caused an agitation in the crowd. They were making a big agitation in the meeting. And so Prabhupada confronted them. Basically, well, maybe it wasn't calling their bluff, but he confronted them in a very interesting way. He had a plate with an apple on it, and he cut the apple up with a knife, and he put the knife on the plate, and he handed the plate. He held the plate like that in front of the Naxalite, the leader of the Naxalites. There was a knife there, and there was an apple there. Prabhupada didn't say anything. He was giving him, he was giving this guy the opportunity to take the knife and kill him. And he just held him, and the place went dead quiet. And it was really interesting because there was tens of thousands of people in the pandal. So, you know, Prabhupada was really putting them in a very tense situation because, you know, most likely if they had taken the knife to kill Prabhupada, they themselves would have been killed by these thousands of people. And because they recognized Prabhupada as being a great sadhu. So, you know, after some tense moments of silence, then there's an Naxalite leader, he took the apple. So you see, Prabhupada, he was not, he didn't flinch an inch. He didn't give it even an inch, you know, in his determination. Prabhupada sometimes say his stark determination to push on Krishna consciousness. It was the only thing for him was to push on the process of Krishna consciousness. And even though sometimes very, very difficult, very difficult. You know, when he had his mind set on achieving a goal, he achieved that goal. And we see the results are wonderful. We see, like one of the things I experienced, well, my wife and I experienced in travelling around, we visited, in 10 weeks, we visited 23 temples in Scotland, Ireland, Wales, UK, Germany, Hungary and France. And the same thing was there everywhere we went, where devotees were inspired by Srila Prabhupada's example, were giving their lives, were surrendering based on the example given by Srila Prabhupada. So we see that Prabhupada's, you know, sacrifice, his surrender, is actually what is motivating all of us to give ourselves in Krishna consciousness. It's not that we've had some, like, you know, great realization, not that we're very, very advanced devotees or anything like that. No, we've seen the example of a great personality. So that is in itself giving us that impetus, giving us that inspiration to go ahead. And this is actually a devotional process. One becomes a devotee by the association of devotees. One becomes a great personality by the association of great personality. So we're seeing the example. This is why the process of the Goshti Nandi is far superior to the process of the Bhajanandi, because the Bhajanandi, even though they're a great devotee, they just sit in their Bhajan Kutya and they have no interaction with anyone else. So others don't get much benefit from their greatness, from their austerity, their development into devotional service. Whereas the Goshti Nandi, he makes so much arrangement, he makes so much facility for others to come into contact with him and thereby themselves develop devotional service and become advanced. So this is why the International Society for Krishna Consciousness is such an important movement, because it's a movement of Goshti and others that are dedicated to giving other living entities the opportunity to come into contact with Krishna consciousness and thereby perfecting their lives. So these qualities are being discussed here, like Kripalu, you know. They're unable to tolerate the suffering of others, therefore they make so many arrangements for giving Krishna consciousness to others. Just like Prabhupada, you know, he didn't need to build any temples. For himself personally, what was the benefit? He was already situated in pure Krishna consciousness. He was living in Vrindavan at the lotus feet of Rupa Goswami. What need did he have to build temples? But he wanted to give others the opportunity to become Krishna conscious. So therefore, unable to tolerate the way they're suffering, he made these arrangements. Jita,
Jita,
having conquered,
Satguna,
the six material qualities. anyone listen to the six material qualities, actually they're not good qualities, they're you know, Bhagavad Gita Thakura discusses in one of his songs, what's that, trying to remember the song, I think it's Bhagavad Gita Thakura, is it? Chaya Vega Domi, Chaya Dosha Shori, Chaya Dosha Shori, so the six, you know, negative qualities. Do anyone remember what they are? Without reading the book. Let's see. Hunger, thirst, lamentation, illusion, old age and death. This is a different list, I mean, you see different lists, but this is what's mentioned here. There's hunger, thirst, lamentation, illusion, old age and death. And actually we're all affected by these things. I mean, you know, who at midnight last night that had been, not last night, who had been fasting all the day didn't feel hungry. We all felt hungry. This is natural because we're actually affected by the body. We're not aloof yet. Doesn't mean we can't become aloof, but we're affected by these things. Thirst, lamentation, you know, when someone dies we lament. Illusion, old age and death. Amani. Without desire for prestige. Manada. Offering all respects to others.
Offering all respects to others.
Another one that's often reversed here in this world is we all want all respect for ourselves and aren't prepared to offer any respect to others.
Kalyana.
Expert in reviving the Krishna consciousness of others. Maitra. Oh, this is a good one.
Never cheating anyone.
And thus a true friend.
And
actually, Prabhupada describes, giving a class on that, I think it's that verse, Bhakti Yama Yoga Tapa Samasarva Lokamaheshwara. Krishna says, Suridam Sarvabhutana. But actually, he's the only friend. And Prabhupada describes, he says that actually in this whole material world, only Krishna is your friend. Because Krishna will never cheat you. And Krishna, he's the only one who can actually give you what you need. No one else can give you that. Not even the spiritual master Prabhupada describes. He says, not even I can give you that, but I can direct you to Krishna. So then in that sense, I'm your friend. But we see that actually Krishna is the only true friend of the living entities because Krishna is the only one who can give us what we really need. And that is, you know, liberation and love of Godhead. And we see here, it's interesting that as the translator says, never cheating anyone and thus a true friend. Because we see that even though there are many, many relationships where we, oh, this one's my friend, that one's not my friend, and so many different types of friends we have, but ultimately there's so much cheating going on in those relationships. The way that people exploit each other. I remember so many things from my past life where, you know, the way people would interact with you is they would only interact with you if they could get something from you. And if you had nothing to offer, then they weren't your friend. And there's so many different sayings, you know, that, you know, which I won't bring up, but no. So many different sayings that sort of help you to understand how people are simply interested in exploiting you. And we see, like sometimes you hear devotees comment that, oh, you know, people in the material world are actually much nicer to us than devotees. Now, there's two aspects. There's the fact that they're saying things like that's not very good because it means the devotees are not being very compassionate in their dealings and not actually behaving as saintly persons. But also, it indicates to me, at least, that they're not really understanding the true nature of these interactions with the non-devotees, because the non-devotees are only acting nicely because they want something. As soon as they can't get something from you, will they act like that? I think not. I think the nature of relationships will change. Karunika.
Karunika.
Acting always due to compassion.
Not
personal ambition.
Kavi.
Completely learned.
Completely.
Okay, so that's the end of the first three verses here. Interestingly enough, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur states that these verses are describing a mixed devotee, not actually a greatly advanced devotee. Because, you know, you read these qualities, and they're wonderful qualities. I mean, you know, who wouldn't want to possess, merciful, never injure anyone, even if the other's aggressive, he's tolerant. You know, I mean, how many of us possess these qualities? There's 28 qualities in the devotee. I don't think I possess any of them to any great extent. Maybe a little bit here and there, but not much being described here. But Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura points out that these are actually the qualities of a saintly person, not of a greatly advanced devotee. He says that verse 32, however, is discussing a pure devotee. We can only describe those. Agyaya, knowing,
evam,
thus,
gunam,
good qualities,
dosham,
bad qualities,
maya,
by me,
adishtam,
taught,
api,
even,
svakam,
one's own.
Dharmam,
religious principles.
Satyajya,
giving up.
Ya, one move.
Sarvam,
all.
Mam,
may.
Bhajeta,
worships.
Sa,
he.
To,
indeed.
Sattama,
the best among saintly persons.
So I'll just read the translation. I'll go over the whole translation in a minute, but I'll just read the translation of that last verse, which is very interesting. It starts off, having taken complete shelter at my lotus feet, however, a saintly person ultimately renounces all such ordinary religious duties. So he's saying all these other qualities, just ordinary religious duties, and worships me alone. He is thus considered to be the best among all living entities, which is actually the description of a devotee. A pure devotee of Krishna is the best among all living entities. So we see how these, the first three verses are actually just describing saintly qualities. And a saintly person is not necessarily a devotee, is not necessarily a pure devotee, but they are better than the common person. But just because one possesses saintly qualities, it doesn't necessarily mean that one's a great devotee of the Lord. Just like we see, I believe it's described in the Chaitanya Bhagavat. I've never read the Chaitanya Bhagavat, so I can't actually say, but I've heard it's described in the Chaitanya Bhagavat. But there was a brahmachari who was wanting to participate in the nocturnal kirtan pastimes of Lord Chaitanya in the house of Srivas Thakur. And so he came to Srivas Thakur and he was explaining to Srivas Thakur that I've been a brahmachari all my life, you know, I perform austerities, I only drink milk. And Srivas Thakur was very impressed by his so-called credits. And so then he, Srivas allowed him to come and sort of hide himself in the room when they're having the kirtans. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was there in the evening, they were having the kirtan, he was dancing, and he's saying, Srivas, why am I experiencing any pain? There's something wrong here, some person is here with impure qualities. He said, Srivas, if you allow someone to come into the room. And then finally Srivas admitted that he allowed this brahmachari. He said, but he's a very, very pure brahmachari, he only ever drinks milk. And then so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that actually, just drinking milk is not sufficient to develop love of God. It's not sufficient to become purified in material desires. And so he drove that brahmachari out. And then the brahmachari became very, very disturbed, and actually that his longing to participate in the pastimes, the Lord's nocturnal pastimes, was so developed because he had been kicked out, that he actually became purified that, and Lord Chaitanya admitted him back into the pastimes. But the point being is that just because one possesses all these saintly qualities, it doesn't necessarily qualify us to be pure devotees. Even though and sometimes we see that devotees have different qualities, which are very laudable. You know, one may be a great manager, one may be, you know, a great orator. I've seen devotees who give fabulous classes, but it's just a lot of knowledge. And because later on we see they get into all sorts of difficulty, perform activities and stuff like that. So, you know, just because one can do various things or one has various qualities, it doesn't necessarily mean that one's a great devotee. The symptom of a great devotee is they just have complete surrender to the lotus feet of Krishna. They know nothing but Krishna. Just like we see, the same point is being made in this last verse. Krishna said to Arjuna, he says, Sarvam Pritya Jamamin Kam Sarvamja, Aham Kam Sarvapapi Moksishna. He says, abandon everything, abandon all varieties of which and surrender unto me. I will deliver you from all suffering, which do not fear. You know, Krishna describes in 1865, Prabhupada defines that as being surrender. He says, Mamarabha Mabhakto Majyaji Mamoskuru Mamayashi Pratijena Priyosa. Always think of me. He says, always. Become my devotee. Worship me. Offer your homage to me. So he's describing what it means to be a devotee is you're constantly absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. It's not you're doing anything else. You're just absorbed in Krishna. There's nothing else in your life. We see with Prabhupada, you know, exactly like that. He was constantly absorbed in Krishna. His whole life was focused on how to propagate Krishna consciousness. So much so that in the space of 11 short years, he traveled, you know, from 1965 to 1977, 12 years, but really 11 years. You know, in 66 is when he started the society. Then he traveled around the globe, I think about 14 times. He opened approximately 100 temples, and he had 6,000 or 7,000 disciples, initiated disciples. You know, many of them were brahmanas, many were sannyasis. You look at what Srila Prabhupada did in such a short space of time. It just leads us to one conclusion: Krishna Shakti Vinanani Tara Pravatam. He had this Shakti of Krishna. He was blessed by Krishna to be able to do this, because no ordinary person could do such a thing. Just, you know, like when I was in Paris, this is one of the, you know, the highlights of the trip, actually one of the highlights of the last 10 years for me, is we moved the deities from Noisy-le-Grand to Sarcelle, to a new place. I mean, anyone who's on Facebook would have seen the pictures of the deities moving. And that was, you know, to me that was such an achievement to do that. But then you look at what the devotees had to do to actually move the deities. They bought one place down the road, and it was not a particularly nice house, not as nice as the house they have now. And they were setting up to install the deities. They modified, there was this like room at the long room at the back where it actually used to be a swimming pool, but they covered over the swimming pool and they built an altar on top of it. And they were going to sort of extend the temple around into the garden. But then the local council wouldn't allow them to do it because there's no parking. So there's all these problems, you know, and they're trying to find parking, trying to go around, getting all the people around to allow them, you know, to have parking, you know, on weekends and stuff like that. And then finally, Peter Basprabhu, he's one of the devotees who's there helping Nithai Gaurasundar, who's the temple president. He was going around and visiting the relatives, the neighbours, and he's very good at striking up relationships with people. And so he's visiting one man in a house three doors up. And, you know, and he was actually asking about, you know, parking, because there's quite a large space there where they could park. And somehow or other they got on the subject of the house, and the man agreed to sell the house to them at a very good price. So then somehow or other, you know, this devotee who was living in New Zealand, Chaitanya Thakur, he's moved back to France. And he pledged a large sum of money, which enabled them to purchase house. So we see, like, you know, because they were going ahead and trying to, they just had this one purpose of trying to find a nice place for Krishna, because the house in Noisy-le-Grand was, you wouldn't live in a house like that. It was just really, really bad house. You know, it was really packed. The deities were in the lounge room, which was like, you know, maybe 12 foot wide, about 15, 16 foot long. The deities were actually in that space, a very small space. And that's, you know, you've got Bonitai, Radha Parashishvara, and Jagannatha Subhadra. And Radha Parashishvara are big deities, they're like about this big. And really, really heavy. It took 3 years to lift it. Very heavy. And so it was a very difficult situation, but because they were focused on trying to get a new home for Parasishva, then Krishna arranged all these things to happen. And the whole thing came very nicely. So we can see that, by having this exclusive devotion to Krishna, or being, as Krishna says in the Gita, but one has this one point of focus in Krishna consciousness, becomes resolute in their purpose. But then he says, but one whose intelligence is many branches, they're always trying to do so many different things, but many branches, then actually we're irresolute. And when we're irresolute, we find it very difficult to achieve our goal. So we see that Srila Prabhupada was very resolute in his purpose. He simply wanted to give Krishna consciousness. He did it in so many different ways. But because of this resolute determination, he was so successful in his endeavors. And the same is there for us. If we're resolute in our purpose, if we're resolute in our goal of becoming Krishna conscious, if we're resolute in our aim of spreading Krishna consciousness, or whatever it is, our task, or whatever it is we're trying to achieve in our Krishna consciousness, if we become resolute, then we will achieve that goal in due course of time. It's just a matter of time. And sometimes Prabhupada would say, he was sitting down in the park in New York discussing about how many temples they had. And he says, we have Radha Krishna temples everywhere, it's just time separating. So it's just a matter of time. Time passes very quickly. And as you see, you look back over the years and how short a time it was ago that you were 10 or 15 years old. Time passes very quickly in this world. So, by being resolute in our determination, then we can achieve all these different qualities. I'll just read the verses. It's quite long. I won't read the first one. Yeah. Maybe whoever keeps class tomorrow.
If someone sees Peter, tell them to just read the same on the board.
Translation: the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "O Uddhava, a saintly person is merciful and never injures others. Even if others are aggressive, he is tolerant and forgiving toward all living entities. His strength and meaning in life comes from the truth itself. He is free from all envy and jealousy, and his mind is equal in material happiness and distress." Notice it says material happiness and distress. "Thus, he dedicates his time to work for the welfare of others. His intelligence is never bewildered by material desires, and he has control of his senses. His behavior is always pleasing, never harsh, and always exemplary. And he is free from possessiveness. He never endeavors in ordinary worldly activities, and he strictly controls his eating. He therefore always remains steady. He always remains peaceful and steady. A saintly person is thoughtful and accepts me as his only shelter. Such a person is very cautious in the execution of his duties and is never subject to superficial transformations because he is steady and noble, even in a distressing situation. He has conquered over the six material qualities, namely hunger, thirst, lamentation, illusion, old age, and death. He is free from all desire for prestige and offers honor to others. He is expert in reviving the Krishna consciousness of others and therefore never cheats anyone. Rather, he is a well-wishing friend to all, being most merciful. Such a saintly person must be considered the most learned of men. He perfectly understands that the ordinary religious duties prescribed by me in various Vedic scriptures possess favorable qualities that purify the performer, and he knows that neglect of such duties constitutes a discrepancy in one's life." Quite interesting, isn't it? According to Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, this is describing a mixed devotee. But if we look at those things, these are all I can say for myself, I'm sure for all of you, these are desirable qualities. We want to be like this. But Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur is saying this is a mixed devotee. And then he goes on to say, "Having taken complete shelter at my lotus feet, however," so immediately he says, "however, therefore he's separating. Having taken complete shelter, this person here who's got these qualities, hasn't taken complete shelter at Krishna's lotus feet. He's aspiring to, he's working towards that, but he hasn't achieved it yet. Yeah? So having taken complete shelter at my lotus feet, however, a sainted person ultimately renounces such ordinary religious duties and worships me alone. So he's saying that these are ordinary religious duties. And if you analyze, look at what Krishna was trying to get Arjuna to do. He was trying to get him to kill all his most dear family members. At Kurukshetra, 640 million people were killed. And Arjuna was the single biggest killer of people. So if we look at ordinary morality, such a person is considered abominable because they've killed millions and millions of people. There were days when Arjuna wiped out not just one or two, but I think three or four Pakshahini divisions of men. He wiped out an entire race one day. And just completely obliterated. They ceased to exist. When he was travelling around the universe, he wiped out the Nimitika Dakshas. Huge amount of people he just killed on the instructions of Krishna. So, if you take ordinary morality, if you take ordinary religious sort of understandings, this is simple activity. But because he gave up his concept of ordinary morality, because we see in the Bhagavad Gita in the beginning, in the first chapter, Arjuna says to Krishna, that I heard from authorities that, if we allow all these people to be killed, then irreligion will become prevalent. He's saying that by allowing his warfare to go on, that Vana Shankara would be the result. But Krishna is saying that this is actually an ordinary morality. I'm giving you something higher. So, the person here that Krishna is saying to Uddhava, the highest person, he renounces all these things as ordinary religious duties and understands what the highest principle is. And that means complete surrender to Krishna. That you give up all your own concepts of what is religion, what is right, what is wrong, and just accept what Krishna says. He renounces all ordinary religious duties and worships me alone. He is thus considered to be the best among all living entities. And even we see another good example in the Mahabharata was Yudhisthira Maharaj would not tell a lie. Krishna instructed him to lie. But he thought that honesty was higher at that point. Later on he saw differently, but at that point he thought that honesty was a higher principle than following the instructions of Krishna, because Krishna was telling him to lie. So that in itself is ordinary morality. That in itself is ordinary religious principles. But we understand that the great devotee understands what is the highest religious principle. Interesting example, not that I encourage any of us to do this. When we played Monopoly, you get this card that used to come up, bank error in your favor, collect 200. So one time the Bank of America accidentally put $10,000 in Prabhupada's account, and he automatically withdrew the money and spent it. And they were writing in letters for a long time trying to get that money back. They even started to read Prabhupada's books, and they were quoting they quoted that verse of Prabhupada, saying, basically, this is our money, you take it, you can't do this. And Prabhupada just ignored it because he understood what money was for. He understood the real purpose of money was to use it in Christian service. Now, if we did that, we'd be overcome by sin because we don't have that kind of purity. But because Srila Prabhupada was completely absorbed in serving Krishna, because Srila Prabhupada had no material desire, he was just using that for printing books to tell people about Krishna, then he wasn't overcome by sin. So we need to be very careful to understand our own degree of advancement and not to misjudge others that are very, very advanced, like Srila Prabhupada. A greatly advanced person can do so many things and not affected. There's a verse in the Bhagavatam that describes that, having not contaminated by the reactions of these things. But an ordinary person. It's just like, a small well. This description is also given in the Bhagavatam. A small well may become contaminated. If we wash our dirty dishes in it, for instance, the water will become contaminated. But if you go washing your dishes in a great big lake, it doesn't become affected. So a great devotee is like that. A great devotee does not become affected. And just like you can see how Prabhupada was able to initiate tens of, you know, thousands of devotees and not become affected by it. Whereas someone who is not such a powerful devotee, even they initiate a few devotees, they become affected by it. We've seen that gurus become affected when they take on too many disciples. So we need to be aware of our limitations and also aware of the greatness of someone like Srila Prabhupada or the Arboriya Vaishnava Charis, how they perform uncommon activities because of their greatness, because of their purity. And that the source of that purity is Krishna himself. And this is discussed a lot in the previous verse, and the Vishnu Thakur's comments on the previous verse are quite amazing, what he's saying about how great devotees of the spiritual masters are actually. He quotes that verse, Krishna Shakti Vinahitaha Prabhupada. Because of their surrender to Krishna, they become blessed with the Shakti of Krishna. So, in a sense, and he quotes that verse when Narad Muni was saying how when he had this exclusive devotion to Krishna, and how he received, what's the verse? I don't remember. He received this. When did he receive this? It says spirit. The description is not spiritual body. It says something else there, and how he gave up his body of five gross elements. So then Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur draws the conclusion that a great preacher or the guru, it's like that for him also. He's no longer, he's considered to be, you know, an ordinary material living entity, but actually he's received his Shakti from Krishna. And therefore we see, as it says, Sakshad Haritvayam Ashramasta Shastra, we worship the Guru as non-different from Krishna. Not that he is Krishna, but because he's received his Shakti from Krishna, then he's not. And it's also in the 11th canto described there that Acharya Mam Vijaniyam Na Olam Yadikaraja Na Matyabha Suri Savadeva. One should not think the Acharya or the spiritual master be an ordinary person. You should understand that he's the direct representative of myself. Krishna is saying he's the direct representative of me. So when one actually becomes qualified as a spiritual master, this is not an ordinary thing, not an ordinary person. It's not that anyone can do it. One actually has to, as Prabhupada says, it has to canvass on Krishna's life. Give their life exclusively to this. And then they become, if you like, blessed by Krishna. It's a very, very interesting section in the Bhagavad Gita. Okay, so we've finished it. Is there any questions or? Bhagavatam ki samaveta bhakti ki sri